Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Rob McCarron.
Hashtag authority. Hashtag Steph Bouncy. Hashtag SmackDown 15.
Jeff Hawkins.
You done digging that hole?
You're listening to Shake Them Ropes with Rob McCarron and Jeff Hawkins.
Dance on your grave, dirt sheet writer.
Jeff Hawkins, I don't know if you ever feel this way about the month of November, like I feel, but immediately, you know that week right after Thanksgiving, where it's just like, okay, it's holiday season now, Thanksgiving has just come, it's Black Friday, we're on to Cyber Monday. Like it feels kind of like it's December and we're on the road to Christmas, but there's still like another week and a couple days in November. I'm feeling that way right now about May.
Okay. I feel that way. It's weird for me because it's like I usually take 2 or 3 weeks off the end of the year just to recharge. Ooh.
Look at me taking almost the entire month of December off.
No, I don't. But it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like, but it's also like one of my most stressful times at work because everybody's trying to get everything done by the holidays, but I don't want to work. I just want to do holiday things as opposed to worrying about work. So I get you on that. And plus there's just so much football, and I love
so much football. But now I'm thinking that way about May, and we haven't even gotten to Memorial Day yet, but like I'm feeling that way at the end of Memorial Day, because for the last few weeks I've been lamenting about how there's two big WWE shows this month in May. We had Backlash, and now we're on to Saturday Night's Main Event, which you could argue is not a big show. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But Jeff, I texted you the other day, because I was like, holy shit, did you know there's a third damn PLE in this month?
You know what confused me was I was going, what's the third PLE? And he's going, because I knew Clash and Backlash. I'm going, is he calling Saturday Night's Main Event a PLE?
Well, it is. It kind of is, because you have to have Peacock to get it.
You've spent 4 weeks trashing that it's in your hometown.
Well, yeah, no. Well, we'll talk about how Fort Wayne this Saturday Night's Main Event is. When we discovered what our main event is, the show is going to be. We'll talk about that. But yeah, I just got that vibe. I'm like, I was thinking there were two shows condensed right after WrestleMania, but no, there's three, because Clash in Italy takes place in May. Then there's a June pay-per-view, which they're going to Saudi Arabia. Then July is going to have a Saturday Night's Main Event. And then you have SummerSlam the very first 2 days in August. So yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Saturday Night's Main Event. We're going to talk a little bit about some news coming from WWE. Just today, they're going to go on house shows again. They're going to do a house show tour of the United States in July and August. Have you seen this, Jeff? And what do you make of WWE going back on the road a little bit more for house shows in the summer?
I don't mind it. I saw it. I think for some of the younger wrestlers, it'll be good. It just depends on who's on these house shows. Like
I wanted to bring that up, but yeah, go finish your thought. Like, because I agree with you. I think it's going to be, populated by the younger roster members that are on Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah.
And not so much like NXT and guys who aren't on TV.
Because I think they're watching this and going, okay, when we want to bring them up to do longer matches, they don't have that skill set because all they've been doing is NXT and Raw type matches. But at the same time, it's probably also going to be the workhorses who can lead them through them. Like, you're going to get your Baileys on there. You're going to get your...
Sure. Yeah.
Those
you're going to have some names.
You're gonna have some names to sell tickets.
But there's no Roman Reigns. There's not going to be CM Punk on probably any of these shows. The occasional one or two. Maybe Cody Rhodes on one. I could see them do. Okay, this weekend, guys, it's Cody Rhodes. Next weekend, it's CM Punk.
Yeah.
No Roman Reigns at all. And then next weekend, you might get like Randy Orton possibly on one of these shows. But at this point, if he doesn't come back to TV, he's not going to be on these shows. But I wanted to go into the schedule a little bit because there are quite a few Thursdays on this schedule. So they're going from July 11th to August 30th. They've announced 10 dates. So it's not like they're going out every single weekend for 2 to 3 shows. They're not doing that. But some of these shows are on Thursday. For example, Thursday, July 16th is the only house show that weekend. So you're going to see the undercarders of SmackDown on that show. You're probably not going to see much of the names of Raw because why bring them in for Monday to send them home, to bring them in for Thursday to send them home, to bring them back in for Monday? This is going to be the non-main eventers probably of SmackDown on this show. There's also a Thursday night before SummerSlam. There's going to be a Thursday night, so then you'll have SmackDown on Friday and SummerSlam, the 1st and 2nd of August. So you're going to have a 4-day, and that I can see that being the people on SmackDown or Raw who maybe aren't on the SummerSlam card with
Let
the
me
addition
ask
of
this.
The new one main eventer.
Do you think that that's also possibly a dress rehearsal for SummerSlam, like they used to do?
Which is what happened back in my time for house shows, right? The lead up, the road to WrestleMania, would be, for example, now this is I don't know why I'm going to this. It's only because I went to these shows. But you had Chris Benoit versus Triple H in the road to WrestleMania 20 because they were wrestling. They were in the program together. It was those two wrestling for the world title before the triple threat at WrestleMania. Went to a WrestleMania where it was Kevin Nash versus Steve Austin, you know, getting ready for that road to WrestleMania match going into WrestleMania 18. You got a lot of previews. A lot of the guys who were wrestling on the big pay-per-view were going to wrestle on these house shows. I don't think it's going to be like that at all.
Okay.
I think even the singles guys who are, say, for example, Ethan Page and Penta are in an IC title program right now, right? You're going to see Javon and Penta versus Rusev and Ethan Page, for example. You're going to see some of the tag team matches comprised of some of those singles feuds. I just think this is going to be a way for them to make some money because, God, we're going to talk about the Saturday night's main event in Fort Wayne. There's two matches announced the week before the show, and they're not huge, gigantic matches. They're going to get the money from these towns the moment they put them on sale. You're going to see some main events on these shows that are probably maybe even like a Rey Mysterio versus somebody, maybe a Gunther versus somebody who isn't Cody Rhodes. Like, these are going to be what B-level house shows used to be now as the main idea for the house shows. It's a way for cheap. It's TKO being cheap again. Let's sell cheaper tickets, but that also means you're going to get a cheaper show.
Yeah, but in the long run, it'll be better. I think.
I'm not saying it's bad for like the wrestlers.
Okay.
But if you think you're going to get a house show that you guys were, and we haven't had these house shows in a long time where it was the big main eventers were on every single house show. Like I talked about how Steve Austin was wrestling undercards on house shows back in the early 2000s, getting ready for a WrestleMania. Triple H was on every house show. But we're not talking about 25 years ago house shows. We're kind of talking about how house shows died maybe 6-7 years ago where, you weren't getting the big stars.
Yeah, you weren't getting the big stars, and nobody would come out, and everybody was like, "Oh, the only things that matter are on TV." I get that.
Right.
It's weird because I'm thinking about when I was young, you know, back, you know, in biblical times.
Yes,
where you literally had an A crew, a B, which was like Dusty and Flair. You had the B crew, which was Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express, and then you had those C shows, which was like Manny Fernandez versus Ron Bass or the Barbarian or something. And those would be the ones that would go to like Roanoke.
those
out of the way places.
At 2 o'clock on a Saturday.
Oh, you would do two shows that day. You do Roanoke at 2, and then you drive to like Cincinnati at 7 or whatever.
Yeah, the second one was always in a tent.
Yes. I don't, TKO being cheap. I mean, if they were being cheap, they wouldn't do this because it still comes at a cost. You know, well, it's one of those things.
But if you, I mean, but if you can sell 5,000 tickets and the average ticket price might be $25 in a small arena where your main event is Javon Evans versus Ethan Page, like, I don't think that's costing you a lot of money. I think there's a benefit to it. And obviously strategic with the schedule here too, because it's happening, you know, the shows are happening in between SmackDown and Raw because you have SmackDown on Fridays. Like, nothing's new about that. But some of the shows are standalone on a Thursday. It's literally the Thursday before SmackDown. Let's bring a couple of names in, you know, the non-Cody Rhodes. Maybe Cody Rhodes will be on these shows. Like, we don't know what the actual lineups for these shows are going to be. I just don't see Cody Rhodes wrestling on him. You're going to see some of the younger names of SmackDown.
Yeah, but what you need to do is bring the young guys in and go, look, these are house shows. You don't need to go full balls to the wall. They just want to see the moves that you do. Well, what I'm thinking of, you remember when, like, right after COVID, Vince decides they need to go on the road again to establish goodwill. So he brings everybody down for a camp and they're doing crossing drills over and over and over again. And Bailey, who's working three shows a week because she's doing NXT, SmackDown, and Raw as part of the golden role models angle and stuff like that, ends up tearing up her knee doing crossing drills and is out for like 9 months. And that's my fear.
You guys are back. Yeah. I don't, well, we're not getting that. I don't know if you know this, but Vince ain't there no more.
Oh, I've heard.
I don't know if you're aware. There has been some changes in leadership lately.
What?
Yeah. I mean, but these are the smaller, I mean, Bakersfield, California, Allentown, Pennsylvania, Fairfax, Virginia, Manchester, New Hampshire, Savannah, Georgia, and Charleston, South Carolina. So Las Cruces, New Mexico. I mean, these are not the big towns. The biggest town on this list, I got to say, is probably what, Stockton, maybe Albuquerque?
No, but Bakersfield had a sneaky good NXT, whatever they call them. I don't know if they call them PLEs or whatever, like during, I think, the Rainbow Days or whatever. That was like off the charts, like whatever. And that crowd was hot. I mean, there are secret spots in this tour where you can get a nice hot crowd if it's full enough and you get the right mix and things like that. We both said it's a positive, so
I think it's a positive. You know, fans are getting more chances to see WWE shows and at a cheaper price, because there's reports out there that, you know, tickets will probably be quite a bit less. This is not a televised event. It's an opportunity for WWE to get content too. I mean, get, whether it's matches to put on YouTube as exclusives, whether it's just, you know, footage to put in some video reels from some of the talent who maybe haven't had a lot of matches yet, like an Obafemi who hasn't had a lot of main roster matches. We're gonna see how these goes. I don't think people are clamoring to see what the results are for these shows, but it was an interesting note. I thought that they were bringing back the summer tour. This is happening the month after the European house show and TV tour. So yeah,
and it's a perfect time. It's a perfect time because it's after that European tour. It's right
summer,
before
foot.
Yeah,
kids
it's right
home.
Before football season starts. You know, you're kind of in the doldrums of baseball season, and most of these are towns where there's, let's not to be cruel, but ain't nothing much going on.
Well, there's no major sports. So you're not gonna you're not gonna be going up against a Chicago Cubs game. You're not gonna be going up against a Dodgers game. You're not gonna
be going up against A-ball and other things like that. So yeah.
And maybe not even that. And in some of the towns, you're not even gonna go up against that. So it's interesting. If you're hearing this and you're like, oh, I'm so excited. Now, a lot of people, they just want to see WWE, and that's perfectly fine. You pay $25 to get in the building to go see a WWE show. You're probably not super bummed if you don't get Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton.
And
you're not necessarily CM Punk.
Yeah, you're not necessarily looking for the 5-star match, but man, those things are fun. Some of those house shows are, and the guys are having fun and the women are having fun trying things and seeing how they can work an audience and things like that. It's a cool experience.
And it's going to give a guy like Obafemi, who's now probably for the next 3 months going to be booked mostly in 2-minute squash matches, to get out there and do a 5 to 7, maybe even a 10-minute match. Like it's obviously positive for the wrestlers. I think it's positive for those local towns. It's a positive story. They're going back out, but knowing what TKO has done over the last year, don't expect the main eventers.
No,
don't expect it. So yeah, that is the WWE summer tour coming to a town near you. Now this Saturday night's main event is coming up. It's May 23rd. It is literally next weekend. I assume we're taping this before SmackDown, so we don't know if something will be added to SmackDown. But right now, Jeff Hawkins, your main event of Saturday night's main event in Fort Wayne, Indiana, exclusively on Peacock on Memorial Weekend, is Penta versus Ethan Page for the Intercontinental Championship.
Okay. What's wrong with that?
Talk about yeah, but the main event of a PLE that people, the get-in price for the show right now is $70. The get-in price. You're paying thousands to be on the floor for Penta versus Ethan Page for the Intercontinental Championship. Now, I thought by no means did I expect this to be like a blowaway show, right? But I thought Cody Rhodes and Gunther might have had a chance to be on this, but that was before I realized Clash in Italy was only the week after that. I thought maybe CM Punk. You were going to get one big name on this show. The biggest name you have on this show is Logan Paul.
I think they make a match tomorrow. I do. It's one of those things. Add?
Charlotte?
Punk and Orton. How about that?
I don't think that's happening.
No, they're not.
Punk's not going to. No, for CM Punk talking about how he's not taking a break after WrestleMania and his Raw after Mania promo, he hasn't been on TV since.
Well, let's go full cynic here. They don't care about Saturday night's main event anymore.
Well, they don't. That's true. They don't care about Peacock.
If they can milk you for money to get into the building, they're going to do it. So
they clearly, it's the perfect town. I mean, they're not going to be back for TV in Fort Wayne probably in 10 years. So it's like the perfect town to do, just sell out the show before any matches even get announced and then just let the people. It's just a bummer too for the local. We talk about, being positive for local fans with house shows is you're going to see WWE, but the last Saturday night's main event had three with an asterisk matches because Drew McIntyre and Jacob Fatu ended up not happening. So there were three official matches and there's no pre-show like dark matches on these events. You went there, paid $100 per ticket to see three matches take place on a Saturday night. And we're probably going to get four for this show. There's probably going to be a women's match added from SmackDown. Maybe it's the Rhea Ripley match. Maybe you just get some type of Charlotte match. I can't imagine Becky Lynch is going to be the match for this one quite yet. But Sol Ruka kind of is the personality that you can put on a Saturday night's main event. Penta versus Ethan Page and the Vision versus the Street Profits. And one of these matches very well may see a title change. So like the moment the day of could be cool. Like it could be somewhat memorable for a title change. But right now, 1 hour of your 2 hour show that you're going to see is going to be Penta versus Ethan Page and the Vision versus the Street Profits, which 6 months ago, not even a year ago, 6 months ago, this might have been an episode of Main Event TV.
Yeah, and you're going to get probably that second-tier women's title from SmackDown that Tiffany Stratton holds.
Yeah,
in a match. That's the level. Yeah, because the big selling thing here is, you get the mid-card singles titles, but you get the world tag team titles.
Hell yeah,
see?
You do.
Yeah. I mean,
and Penta's a big star. You want to make him, Penta and the Intercontinental title mean a little bit more. You main event a show with him. I get it. There's nothing wrong with that match either. I think Ethan Page Penta could be fine. But if it's the main event of the show, it's got to go at least 15. And not really excited about that part.
If this were 6 years ago, it'd be the headlining match on AEW Rampage.
Could be. Go back in time. Go back. Oh, and that match would have gotten 25 minutes then.
Yes. And a run over.
Ooh, a little rough. Three May PLEs. I do consider Saturday night's main event just to be a PLE because it's not on NBC TV anymore. Gunther and Cody Rhodes looks like it's going to happen at Clash in Italy. You're not going to get either world title on Saturday night's main event. Your biggest title, the Intercontinental Championship. I just thought, Fort Wayne, welcome. Welcome to WWE. We would like to remind you that you are Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're here just outside of Indianapolis.
Right.
Remember when they used to do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, all the cities. Remember when at the end of Vince's reign, where he wouldn't even put the cities on the television
anymore. We're here in New Mexico. He wouldn't even put Albuquerque or whatever it was.
Yeah, we're in North Carolina if they go to someplace that isn't Charlotte. Yeah,
Asheville.
We're in just random city. Yes, but Indiana doesn't always get that because really they just kind of go to Fort Wayne if they're not going to Indianapolis. There's not a lot of TV locations in Indiana for us. But yes, I do recall that. Albuquerque might have gotten that treatment back in Vince's day too, with just saying we're in New Mexico. Yeah,
mm-hmm. It did.
Yep. Oh, okay. Well, there you go. There you go. Historian Jeff Hawkins telling us. I would imagine Obafemi. I mean, it's Obafemi might even have a open challenge on Saturday night's main event. So they may not even announce that match. It just happens the day of.
All right, pick someone.
Oh,
because I have a team. It's going to be another tag team. It's going to be like Fraxium. It's going to be Fraxium or something.
We're just redoing the Ryback push with Obafemi now after beating Brock Lesnar. We're regressing to the Ryback beat a tag team. Speaking of, Obafemi's kind of a dick. Like this guy, no one wanted to fight you. That's fine. You have an open challenge. No one wanted to fight you. How about you just go back, regroup, and maybe try to find a match, maybe convince Adam Pearce to force someone to wrestle him, someone who maybe wants a title shot someday. No, he just goes back and picks out two dudes in street clothes and beats them up and headed to the ring. This is your ultimate babyface Obafemi, just beating up two guys who are minding their own damn business backstage.
Ruthless aggression lives.
John Cena wouldn't do this. You know who does shit like that?
He would at the beginning of his career.
You know who does shit like that, where beats guys up in the gorilla position who are wearing street clothes, who are just minding their own business? Bo Dallas. And look where that led him. Watch it, Obafemi. You got to watch it.
Okay.
I'm just saying, don't be a dick. People are just starting to like, don't be a dick. You learn your name first. You're not Obi. You're Oba. Okay. Like, let's get some things straight here. Just don't pick out the street clothes. There wasn't someone back there in a singlet that you could have attacked and brought to the ring. No, you had to buy the guys in street clothes who were minding their own business. Trying what looked like, I don't know, there's some ladies back there they were talking to. They were just trying to, you know, chill out backstage. Obafemi, kind of a dick.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, there are guys in their gear who are just clamoring to Adam Pearce, apparently, backstage all night. But don't want to fight Obafemi. No, no, no. I want a match against Dominic. I don't know.
You know what? Jey Uso, kind of a pussy. What do you got going on right now? You're not in the tag team title picture anymore. You're just the lackey again to Roman Reigns. You couldn't go out there and try to prove yourself against Obafemi?
All right.
What's going on here?
I'm taking something from my lineup then. I'm going to talk about this.
What's going on? What are we doing?
How old were you when Beyond the Mat came out?
It came out in 98, right? 98.
I thought it was 2001, but maybe
wasn't
I'm wrong.
That late. It wasn't the year after the Bret Hart incident. You look that up. You find out when it exactly came out.
99. I think it came.
Okay. So 1999, I was 14 years old.
Okay. Did you have any, you didn't start, when did you start watching wrestling?
Oh yeah. No, Wrestling with Shadows. Definitely watched. I was still young enough to where I was like, oh, give me as much backstage stuff and behind the scenes stuff as I can possibly get. Obviously, I didn't know really Bret Hart from WWF because my first introduction to Bret Hart was mostly his first run in WCW because I was a WCW fan at the time. I didn't start watching WWF until Jeff Jarrett made his return. And that was it was right before the screw job. So I wasn't really watching WWF Raw at the time, but I was getting more into it, but I didn't get fully into it until 1998. So yeah, that my whole introduction to Bret Hart was pretty much from Wrestling with Shadows in his first year in WCW.
Okay. Just to give listeners an update, Bernie Blaustein, who directed it, passed away this week. I had been on the internet since 92 and ingrained in all this newsletter backstage machination stuff. And, I'd been a wrestling fan for about almost 15 years, I would guess. that to, when I came out, I went to the press screening because I got an invite for that. And I went, and my biggest takeaway from that is the most illuminating picture of Vince McMahon I think we're ever going to get. And there's a reason why he tried to get that film squashed. And a lot of my viewpoint on Vince McMahon is through the We Make Movies stuff and how he's directing, you know, backstage and doing all that. Even the more worked stuff, like the Darren Drozdoff, he's gonna puke stuff, did that. Now, don't get me wrong, I had also already washed out of wrestling school, so I just figured everybody's a scumbag, and that the parts with Roland What's-His-Face from UPW, not very illuminating, but it's still like one of those things. I mean, like, and they're just some, like Jake the Snake, you kind of knew was untrustworthy given his stuff with Smoky Mountain, but you didn't realize he had gone down that dark of a path. But Hollywood casting people are weasels. The stuff with New Jack is just so, it's so put upon, and they're so playing for the camera. Oh, he could be Denzel's friend. Yeah, that kind of stuff. You knew they were weasels. But like, there are little things. Like, I'm not saying Jim Ross was telling a guy to get on the gas.
Right.
But. You know, and Jim Cornette watching the dark match and wrestlers being behind him going, I'm going to steal that move.
Well, yeah, I mean, back in the day when dark matches even existed, we talk about house shows going away. Dark matches are kind of a thing of the past for the most part, too. Yeah, Roland Alexander, all pro
wrestling. Roland Alexander, APW. All pro APW, thank you.
Yeah, and obviously Barry Blaustein had such an impact on you, you called him Bernie.
Did I? I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's okay.
Well, it's not, I mean, I knew of him, and I know he directed The Ringer, right? He directed The Ringer with Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah, I believe so. Writer on Coming to America.
I mean, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. No, he did quite a bit. But yeah, Wrestling with Shadows, I think, is just one of those movies that if you're a wrestling fan, especially of an age in the late 90s, this guy might have brought the Mr. McMahon character to life more than anyone outside of Vince did.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he had a incredible impact in late 90s professional wrestling and the documentary of doing behind the scenes of pro wrestling, which I don't know if you know this, but WWE did quite often afterwards after this. And not too far, quite. I mean, this was early 2000s. WWE just started coming out with these documentaries about, to the point where even WWE Network in the mid 2010s literally did this entire documentary style with their Day Of or 24 or whatever it was called, where they did the day before a wrestling pay-per-view, you know, the return of somebody and a day in the life. So they took this entire style and did it for themselves after this. I think it was very impactful. Barry Blaustein passing away, what looks like the age of 71
sounds right. Yeah.
So I know you wanted to get to that. Going back to the in-ring, another big talk-worthy item this week, Asuka and what's going on with Asuka. Is Asuka these days ready for Asuka, or is she no longer ready to be the character that we've fallen in love with over the last 10 years? What's going on with Asuka these days?
Apparently semi-retirement, and I wouldn't be shocked. I haven't prodded anybody in the company or anything for details, because I don't even think they would know. But I wouldn't be shocked if Kyrie's release had a little bit to do. I mean, but she'd been posting like emo stuff for like 3 months about being on the road and being unhappy. And you never know if it's a work or not with her.
I know. But think about this. I mean, she's been wrestling for a healthy amount of time, over 20 years. She's also in her mid-40s. Like anyone in their mid-40s that's been a full-time pro wrestler for as long as she has starts to think about the end. I mean, hell, greats like Steve Austin retired before they were even 40.
She's one of the more remarkable stories in WWE because she goes against everything that Vince would ever push. And they still pushed her.
Is she, is she the most, since 2000, maybe I'm missing a glaring name out there that you'll remind me of. But even with Shinsuke Nakamura, some of the folks that have come from a New Japan, Albert, You know, they get hot in Japan and they bring him over to WWE and then they just fizzle out. You know, Shinsuke never fizzled out, but he never got the heights of where he was in New Japan. Asuka came in and just, she's been the show for a good part of the last 12 years.
Finn Balor would be the one that I would talk to you.
Finn Balor's had a hell of a run. Finn Balor, yeah. You know, some people, and I'm not with these people at all, but some people argue like, oh, they're just wasting Finn Balor. He's never been at the top. He's never been one of the main eventers.
And he was the first unified champion. He was their choice. He just got hurt.
He had that week. He had that week where he was up there. But this guy has been getting regular TV time multiple times a night for the last couple of years. This Judgment Day lasted so much longer. I mean, this Judgment Day has lasted almost as long, if not longer, than the NWO at their height. Finn Balor has had a hell of a career. But again, Asuka and Finn Balor are probably those two, because there's so many that they try to bring over from New Japan that get hot elsewhere. And they just bring them in and they're just not it. Like, they fizzle out for whatever reason it is. They kept trying to do it with Andrade. They kept, we're still, you know, I think they're doing it so far with Penta, but we'll see if he reaches that next level where he's like an important part of the show and fans are clamoring for him. Cause I don't think they've reached that level yet. But Asuka went against the odds and was a main eventer on the women's side for 10 years.
She might have been, along with that, I mean, that absolute nonsense that Bayley and Sasha were doing that was so great with the Golden Role Model. She might have been the MVP of the COVID era for WWE, because she was doing, I mean, she was stealing the show with just being basically a silent film comedian is what she was doing, because nobody could understand her, but what she was doing was interesting. And the other thing that just blows me away as I was thinking about this was, okay, she's introduced on NXT as Kana at, I believe it was Brooklyn 2. And you're like, okay, just she's coming in.
Where she's in the crowd.
Yeah she's coming in. She's going to be a star. You're thinking, okay, she's from Japan. She has a ceiling. She can't speak English, so they're going to turn on her. All those little cynical things you pick up on when you read too much backstage stuff. And then she makes her debut in Dallas at that NXT show Mania Weekend, really the first of its kind. And this is when Bayley is at her apex after doing the whole program with Sasha at Brooklyn 2 and then doing the Iron Woman match at I forget the name of that thing, but you know, the 30 where the flowers come in, the tears, people turn on it because why are you, you know, breaking the business, all that other stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't NXT TakeOver Dallas was like her coming out. It wasn't her debut. She had wrestled on PLEs before, right? She wrestled against, she beat Emma in 15 minutes on the previous event. But like, this was the big, okay, Asuka's coming in, she's undefeated and she's getting a title match. Cause she wrestled Dana Brooke, the pay-per-view before.
Oh yeah, she had squash matches then, right. Kind of. Okay, but everybody's like, all right, here's where Bayley gets that big win. You know, and it cements her against, you know, her monster heel, and then she can finally now be a star on the main roster. That's what we're thinking, because like the other three were already brought up. And Asuka comes in and beats her. And the silence when you just, like, she has her in the Asuka lock, and you're like, all right, here's where Bayley makes her comeback. And then the bell rings. And the deadly silence of that crowd still sticks with me. Because we're just like, wait, they did what?
Yeah.
And then Asuka had a hell of a run as NXT Women's Champion.
Yes, she did.
For that next generation.
She's like one of those who, people talk about Tom Brady and LeBron James having multiple Hall of Fame careers because they had so much longevity, where literally you could break their career into two or into three in some cases, and every single one of them would be Hall of Fame worthy. Asuka kind of had two Hall of Fame worthy careers, her NXT and initial rise in WWE, and then when she was the women's champion in WWE and still was doing quite a bit. The NXT thing really made her seem like a superstar, but you always have to do it on the main shows. And Asuka, with Vince McMahon in charge, was still doing it on the main shows and becoming the Asuka that we would
everything about her. They kept her entire gimmick from NXT.
Yep.
Her music, that theme, that bow, you know,
it went away
sound,
for a little bit.
Yeah. And she cooled off. But that sound of like, it's almost like the coming of doom when that noise hits and the arena turns black and the mask shows up on the Titantron. Her entire aura was just fear almost, you know. It's like, I'm coming in to kill you and I'm gonna have fun doing it, because she was having a blast, it looked like, every time. So even when she was doing weird clown makeup and stuff like that, it was all part of it. She reinvented herself multiple times, even though it wasn't like, even though it was like, oh, I'm gonna put a snake across my face.
While still being kind of the same character. Like, it's not like she completely changed her personality, but she was fresh all the time. Yeah. And she had some time off there. Like, she had a couple of injuries where she was gone for a while. So that, you know, that always kind of keeps a character fresh, despite them probably not wanting to be out that amount of time. What an era. So Asuka debuts in NXT in 2015 and into 2016 with that NXT takeover Dallas. What an era of NXT, though, in those 2 years, because not only did you have Shinsuke Nakamura coming in, but you had Jushin Liger wrestling on NXT events.
Tyler Breeze,
Tyler Breeze wrestling against Jushin Liger there. Emma was still a thing.
That was the Owen Zane era of NXT.
Owens, it was kind of, it was like towards the tail end of Owen Zane, because Sami Zayn was wrestling Shinsuke and then went on to the main roster. Kevin Owens was not too far behind him as well.
American Alpha
The Revival. Just that NXT Takeover Dallas.
Yes.
What a freaking show that was. The Hype Bros, wrestling Zack Ryder and Mojo Rawley.
They weren't bad. They really weren't.
Dash and Dawson. Yep. So what an era of NXT, and the end of an era in WWE for the women's division with Asuka seemingly heading out maybe to just wrestle here and there on maybe some of the bigger shows to be possibly a part-timer, or maybe just not around too much at all. Because again, like, she's 45 years old in September. Like, people, it's okay to leave the wrestling business when you're in your mid-40s. A lot of people do it well before then.
Oh, God, yes.
A lot of people
It used to be you didn't make it to 35 in this business. Right?
I mean, there was a time there, like I said, it was tough to get to 40. You know, people were calling Hulk Hogan old because he was still wrestling close to 50. And he was the old-timer. And now all the main eventers you see are close to or at 50 years old. CM Punk's not far. Chris Jericho is well above it.
And even the women are going into their 40s now, so.
Well, yeah. And Asuka kind of led the way that way, too. I know Trish Stratus and Lita were doing some matches here and there, but full-timer in your mid-40s. A hell of a run from Asuka. Now we go to the other side of the women's division right now, where you have Io Sky and Asuka on top. You have this newcomer coming into Raw, making a big name, getting the page push on her first night without the title win. You have some thoughts on Sol Ruka, the new upstart young hotshot in NXT and WWE.
Before I get to Sol Ruka, for those of you who don't watch NXT on the reg, and I'm not that person anymore, but that Kendall Gray versus Kehlani Jordan match was great. Go watch it. Sol Ruka debuts on a Saturday night's main event, quote unquote, on the main roster against Bayley. Has a really solid, great match. Comes in like a house of fire, is instantly in there with Becky Lynch, building that feud, and then they decide to do this match against Io, where they beat her, but it's, hey, you're the new kid. You'll eventually get there. I'm like, why are you beating her this early? You have so many, she could be wrestling Ivy Nile on Raw. And that, I mean, I get that they won. This is AEW thinking, to be honest with you. Oh, let them just go in there and have a banger, and they lose, and they'll still be just as over. And that's not true. Winning gets you over early in your career. I was baffled by this decision, Rob. I don't understand why they beat her this quick if they have something in her.
Well, because they have plenty of time with her. It's not like she has to be the main eventer in the women's division right now. And let's not pretend like she's not going to get her big win against Becky Lynch.
Right. No, I get
she's
that.
Gonna get, so it's okay to kind of work your way up to that. They did that with Maxine Now I think Sol Ruka has a lot more potential and will be here a long time, longer than Maxine, especially wrestling full time. But yeah, they kind of did that with Maxine and Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch wants, you know, some of these younger people to come up and have her be the first person they beat.
It is. I expected Becky to interfere in this match and then to cause a DQ so that there was no contest involved. And I'm going to admit to you, watching that last Vision promo where Theory gets into the SUV, mm-hmm. I thought that was Sol Ruka, not Maxine at first. I had forgotten all about the Maxine and the Vision
part
of that angle.
It's been going on for a while. Who knows where it's going to lead?
Nowhere.
Yeah, Maxine just being involved with Austin Theory is kind of one of those things where it's like, that's not part of the TV show. They're just hanging out, you know?
They're just giving Easter eggs for people at times. And so when Maxine becomes the quote unquote second Paul Heyman girl.
I tell you what, I mean, I don't think that the American Alpha tag team is probably on the high end of contract and money is worth right now. But with all these WWE cuts going on, and now they're looking at possibly, because this happened on Prime TV, this is more than just the commercial segments that it used to be or in the background. Maxine potentially teasing something even more so with the Vision. I'd be awfully worried if I was the American Alpha guys.
Yeah, I would too.
Especially after getting squashed by Oba Femi. Mm-hmm. The last 3 weeks have not been super, super good for, if I'm American Alpha.
Turn off your phone, Akira Tozawa.
I'm not loving what I've been seeing with what's going on TV right now. But yeah, I don't think there's any harm in beating Sol Ruka, and I don't think there's any harm in beating younger folks who come up. I don't think there's any harm in Javon Evans not winning at WrestleMania. You know, guess what? Pro wrestling's really hard. It's really hard to be the best ever on your first night. You're not Asuka.
No, but I understand the critiques where it's like so much of the WWE is about conditioning your audience to make people think they're winners. And once they get that, maybe they're not all the way behind this person, then the people start doing the what treatment during your promos, and it's really hard to get on top of that. The audience is going to be captivated by our presence without trying to hijack our presence type of thing. You know what I'm saying?
I pick up what you're putting down.
Thank you.
But don't be putting down Sol Ruka now, because she's going to have longevity. She's going to be really good. She's going to be one of these... She's going to be, I mean, she has potential to be Charlotte level, 100%.
I think she has better Oscar charisma.
Level, Charlotte
she has
level.
Better charisma on the mic
probably
than
does.
Charlotte does.
I think. Yeah, she might.
Well, yeah. The promo with Becky where she's like, if you ever interrupt me again.
Well, she's just kind of being real. I mean, yeah. Sol Ruka one day will be a hell of a heel because she's already on the mic kind of healing out. Like mm-hmm. It took everything she did in that, you know, the Paige style debut, the Raw after WrestleMania. For her to not try to be that heelish, she had to be, you know, I'm here. I'm happy to be here. You guys are great. I'm doing great. But like the Sol Ruka coming out now has a little bit of that Jade Cargill in her.
A little. Yeah, you're right.
She does. She has a little bit of you know, I'm the prime bitch here and you guys better watch out. And you're going to have Sol Ruka on the Raw side and Jade Cargill on the SmackDown side. And I don't know how good the match would be one day, but Jade versus Sol Ruka could be a really fun one.
They could be a fun tag team since they both have that tude too.
Yeah, the attitude there. Bailey has a little bit of that sometimes, but you know, she can't do that because that's not what her character is all the time. But Bailey has some salt.
Bailey has some saltiness to her occasionally.
She has some saltiness to her for sure. I wanted to touch on a little bit. Jeff Hawkins, I need you to convince me that AEW is not a backyard federation.
I can't. I'm sorry. The golf course thing was interesting.
An entire show took place effectively in a backyard.
Yes, it did. I can't, Oh, okay. Sorry.
Cut it there. No, cut it right out.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.